be honest with you, I hate grade cricket.
Hello and welcome to the Great Cricketer Podcast. On today's show, we'll ask if there's any danger of Pakistan winning a game in England, or if Owen Morgan's career best form and the weather will sweep Babar. Stuart Broad puts himself first by saying there aren't enough runs in the test team. Australia are dancing in the gym in the bio bubble. Cricket is on free-to-air TV in England, but will it be in Australia? A couple of fantastic chats this week with Sam Billings and Harry Conway to discuss money, hat-tricks, Dhoni, James Faulkner, rigs and salads. Hashtag RTDC involves steroids, Kingston creams and wicket exchange rates. This episode is brought to you by Budgie Smuggler. We can get you exclusive customised face masks at budgiesmuggleruk.com. You can also check out our Patreon at patreon.com/greycricketer for more exclusive content every single week. You can also find this episode right now on YouTube, as well as all the usual places on Spotify and iTunes and all the other podcast apps for full interviews, cut downs of the show. If you want to like, comment, and subscribe on YouTube, that would help us out a lot. My name is Ian Higgins and I'm joined by Sam Perry, who we're calling apparently now in the DMs, Pezzy Lad. How are you, Sam?
Well, thanks, mate. Yep. Well, thanks again. Bit going on in the show. Looking forward to getting into it.
Name of the show. We committed to that.
Yeah.
Bit going on. All right, mate. Well, let's go with the opening question here. Now, apparently there's an MRF stick, which is retailing for Australian dollars, I presume, $2,450 at Kingsgrove Sports, or as it's been seen elsewhere as Queensgrove Sports.
That's right, depending on, your literature.
Pezzy Lad, $2,450 for a cricket bat.
Well, don't say that we don't start with the important questions on the show.
I don't care if Joe Root's not picked in the T20 side.
Exactly. What is Stuart Broad says, what's happening with free-to-air cricket? We'll get to that.
Yeah.
But let's deal with the Kingsgrove catalogue.
A stick is how much?
Yeah. $2,450.
That's fucking so much money, man. That's heaps of money.
It makes me feel old. Like, it makes me feel like how John Howard must have felt when he said milk was like 60 cents as Prime Minister.
I remember when I first saw a bat, it was $600, and I was like, well, this is getting out of hand now.
Yeah.
And I was 11, but I already knew capitalism was going one way, and I didn't like it. That's before the oil money came in.
Firstly, shout out to Kingsgrove Cricket Catalogue, by the way.
I thought you were going to say shout out to oil.
Shout out to Petrostate.
Shell and BP, sponsors of the show.
Kingsgrove Catalogue, like, not a sponsor, just general homage to them. Like, and for many listening to the cast, so Kingsgrove Catalogue was the finest piece of literature you could read between ages 9 to 14.
100%.
So respect to them. Just a few things about this bat. We saw this pop up on Facebook. So it was a screenshot of the Kingsgrove Catalogue. Okay.
Okay,
all right. Okay, get off my back.
Yeah.
The best thing for me was it was down from $2,495, so it was a $45 saving to get that.
Well, you're saving money, MRF actually.
Yeah. Look, MRF is a bit after my time, I must say.
Yeah, it's like, yuck. It's yuck.
Well, it's an Indian multinational tyre manufacturer.
Is that as well?
Of course, like the equivalent in Australia would be like a Bridgestone bat.
Yeah, Goodyear sticks.
Of course, Bridgestone closed its doors in Adelaide in 2010.
Did they?
Of course. Well, people are yelling that into their earphones right now. We closed its doors nearly a decade ago. Mm. It kind of reminded me of I don't know what your history of purchasing sticks is, but I made one of the dumbest purchases of my life, not just for bats, in my commercial transacting life.
Fuck,
when it came to a bat, I was about 20, 21, playing the highest level cricket I had played at that time, Greg Chappell Cricket Centre. I used to go there, I'd pick up the bats, I was very big on the pickup and all that kind of stuff, but I found this Grey Nichols stick. Now, to this point, I hadn't ever bought a Grey Nichols before, and my identity was firmly set in other bats. Never Grey Nichols. It just didn't feel right to me. I don't know what it was. It just felt too stolid kind of thing. Respect to Grey Nichols just wasn't my identity. But I saw this bat, and
what'd you use?
Look, it's boring to get into. I started, I was Mark War. Obviously started with V100, whatever, and then I moved to GM just to get the war thing going on.
Okay.
I had a good Impala bat once. Anyway.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, rare.
Not been used with the kitchens.
That's right. Was it the same company anyway?
Definitely not.
Anyway, I found this Grey Nichols stick, and I have to confess now that, I think the thing that got me over the line for what would have been maybe an $850 bat was the colour of the grip handle.
Which was?
Light blue, so it matched my eyes. And it was the worst stick I've ever had. It was very little middle to speak of for the price. It was a piece of junk, and I know deep down, this is my confession now, I know that I ended up selecting that bat because I thought this just looks good. Like it, and the grip color, which is just ridiculous. Fuck. I understand how ridiculous it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Got me off the line. So anyway, yeah, you know, just treat that MRF bat with a bit of circumspection, I'd say, if you're in the market for
it. I had the same experience because I always use Kookaburra, always. And then my last stick that I bought, which was a $900 bat, it was Grey Nix, and I didn't like it. Yeah. Didn't feel right in my hands.
Yeah.
How good's
going to be? I think if you're Grey Nix, you're probably Grey Nix from birth kind of thing. It's a calling.
Alistair Cook was born with a Grey Nix in his
hands. That's right.
Yeah. Sam Billings.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yes. David Boone earlier.
Good
point. The Grey Nixman.
Good point. I mean, like, because people will know in the sphere of club cricket if you've got the $2,450 bat
yeah.
marked down from $2,495.
Of course. Did you get that saving?
How many runs do you need to score to make that worthwhile? Like that's your last bat you can buy for a start. That's your last stick. That bat's got to last 15 years.
But isn't it the case that the better the bat, the less life it has because of the grains, you know, let's not get into X's and O's of bats, by the way, because I've got a fuck all idea. But, you know, the grains aren't as compressed, so there's more spring in it but more likely to snap. Kind of thing. So
maybe
it's just one of those incredible trysts, you know, sexual trysts that I'm sure you've had before, which they don't last very long, but fuck, you remember them.
Fucking hell.
$2,450, couple of tons.
And that's a metaphor. I've never paid for it. Pez, someone wrote in actually, and I say someone because I haven't got his name written down, but I can open that
and
up.
No doubt it was a he.
And it was Jolyon Bryce. He wrote in a question in relation to this. He said, morning, just coming into two cricket. Spends pounds on a new bat.
How these are all red, like word for word, just to highlight their typos and spelling errors. Go on. Sorry.
Pounds on a new bat. Signed up for my local village team. Booked lessons at a local cricket coach. Had my first lesson Saturday morning. Coach rated me 7 out of 10. Pleased with that for a first go. So pleased, in fact, I spaffed $96 on new gloves and a thigh protector I didn't need. Went to the game full of confidence. Got a dubious first ball LBW decision. Third duck of the season. I've played 4 games. Team drinks / curry after game. Had a few to drown my sorrows. Ended up agreeing to fund half of the new shipping / storage container the club needs. Girlfriend now alternating between amusement and not talking to me while she's frantically trying to find a secondhand one on eBay. At what point does a fun hobby tip into a relationship ruining, finance destroying, embarrassing debacle? Am I destined to be the bloke with a little dog who rolls the pitch and hangs around telling everyone about that high score of 20 he once made? Yours, etc. Jay. Makes a good point. You can't have an investment of $2,450. I'm not saying Jolly did, but and that be any way worth it?
Yeah, I want to know what he does for work. $96 on gloves.
Gloves and a new thigh protector.
Oh, okay. Thigh protector.
Package
okay.
deal.
Right. And what was he paying for at the end? A shipping container?
Well, he agreed to pay for half the shipping container. I'm not sure if this
what's
is
that could do?
I'm not sure.
The club does exports.
Anyway, let us know how much money you're going to spend on a stick this year to pursue your dreams. Your dreams and goals, which are completely unrealistic because you're not going to train any harder and you're the same person with the same small hands and weak forearms. Pez, what's before we get into England, Pakistan, can you tell the people out there what's on Patreon this week?
Quickly real on Patreon. Quick. Great drive last week with Adam Zampa. Great take up after people wanted to know what he was talking about with New South Wales and growing hemp and stuff. There was also Ask TGC Fridays, another episode of that. That included Shakespeare, cuckoldry, turning down ones, crosswords, betting legalities, all-rounders, and a question about the corn dog.
Yep.
You'll have to subscribe to understand what that's about. this week, I'm very excited about this. So what we're dropping this week is the debut installment of a series we're simply titling Cricket Dreams Psychoanalysis. We talk about dreams a lot on the show, but we want to take a step further. We're not just going to kind of sit on our pseudo-Freudian couch and just tell you what your cricket dreams mean. We have got a specialist in. So it's a resident psychologist for, you know, I suppose, for the grey cricketer. His name's Jake Vincent, or at least he's going by Jake Vincent. I'll be specific. He's a psychological scientist currently studying.
Jesus Christ.
I don't know what the fuck that was. Studying honours. He's what we call a depth psychologist. That was just my brain ringing off there.
He's had alarm bells ringing, Pez.
He's had his own dreams analysed and interpreted for 2 years in Jungian psychoanalysis.
Okay.
So he'll be applying this to 3 dreams that we've selected, one about Edward Scissorhands, another a recurring dream about someone missing 4 to 5 spikes on their shoe, and the final one is about David Hussey standing on a roof yelling to the author who's talking to his wife, don't take her shit. Okay, so Jack Vince is going to be in interpreting that. That's okay. going to be on Patreon. So if you can get around that, patreon.com/agreatcricketer. Of course, no dramas if you can't.
England versus Pakistan is a thing that's happening at the moment. Pez, they played two games so far. The first game was a washout, which continues on the theme where they just keep moving around. Well, they're playing between two cities, aren't they? Yeah. They're playing in Southampton, they're playing in Manchester, and obviously two of those test matches in Pakistan. Yeah, exactly, yeah. Two of those matches in Pakistan were heavily rain-affected. And then the first one, well, England had hit for a bit. Tom Banton whacked 70, and that was a washout. Much to talk about there?
No, I really like Tom Banton hits really clean balls.
He's got wonderful levers. He's a levers-based selection.
A lot of levers. I think I said this on the show before. Like I told my dad via text to watch Tom Banton for BBL once. Just watch this guy. And all he wrote back was, can't hit through the offside. He hit about 60 off 25 or something like that. And then he reverse swept one for six.
Yeah.
And I was like, there you go. He's like, offside, his leg side went, you know.
Dad might
be on the spectrum. That's what I thought about that game, mate.
Let's talk about the second game. Pakistan amassed a very respectable score of going 10 and over. They scored 195.
Yep.
And England chased down with five balls to spare.
Yeah.
Owen Morgan hit 60. He said he's in career best form. Big call because he's scored a lot of runs.
A lot of runs.
Seems for Ireland and England. Yeah, people who do that.
Get on YouTube to see Hugo's face for that, just for that alone. highest run chase by any team against Pakistan in T20 cricket. But those records still don't really stack up just because of the recency of the code or that format kicking off. Yeah. But still the highest against
That's
Pakistan.
Why I don't respect Bradman. It's like the game's pretty new.
Yeah.
He's the best player so far.
That's right. Yeah.
Babar Azam's the number one batsman in the world in T20s, which surprised me. I mean, this is all part of the Babar effect.
Yeah.
And I will say his name slightly differently every time. Now, Babar is a good player, opens the batting in the T20s, hits clean ball, doesn't hit through the offside, of course. But I just feel like the rankings, to have an argument with myself,
please,
that they kind of mean nothing because everyone knows like the Kohli is the best in T20s, right? Everyone
or are you bound to say that these days? Is it one of those things that it's an unwritten thing?
You know, if you're trying to make it in cricket, you've got to get into India.
Yeah. The only time I've seen fear in Adam Zampa's eyes was when we asked him about Kohli. He said, yeah, he's my bunny. And then actually his wonderful fiance is standing next to him. Her eyes only popped out of her head at what he just said.
Because
even like Hattie, and I don't know how much Hattie loves cricket, but she knew that there was effigies being burned at that moment.
Well, yeah, it's probably more the death threats coming to the DMs as part of the contractual arrangement if you're saying anything about India.
And that's why you're pumping up Kohli right now.
No, I just feel like, you know, Bumrah's a wonderful player and stuff, but like, you know, like that ranking meant anything?
Mm.
Also, I just feel like Babar Azam, like he's in the top four big boys as we discussed a couple of weeks ago, but is he like he's too new on the scene? Like,
and he's T20i at the stage, and I call it T20i normal. Is it the stage where we can even start making kind of deductions about who's good where and which countries are good? I mean, at the moment, T20 cricket is very much like it's a franchise-based game, it's a club-based game.
Yeah.
You can work out the best players through that, but then it's really like World Cup to World Cup when you want to work out which countries are actually any good, right? Because I just don't feel like I can trust T20
so fragmented.
Tournaments. Yeah, like T20 tournaments at the moment, like T20 country tournaments.
Yeah, because Australia was like supposed to be favourite to win the World Cup, which is supposed to be happening right now, right?
That would only have been because it was in Australia, surely. Good team, no doubt, but if it was in any other country.
Australia's never taken it seriously. And it was like Australia favourites, and I was like, are we? Well, I've never seen us play well.
Yeah.
Never seen us put a team out.
Yeah.
Stark, though, I suppose, Finch and Warner.
That's until Australia selects a long-sleeved spinner. Mm-hmm. Who weighs long sleeve? Yeah, for appropriate purposes.
You talking about Chris Green?
Until Australia selects a long sleeve spinner, then it's going to be difficult for me to see how they'll be the best at T20 cricket.
Now, I started that conversation with Owen Morgan being career best form.
We're talking about Chris Green, Chucky.
normal segues. Owen Morgan, I think he's a little bit underrated. Morgan, maybe this could be an overseas thing, but like he obviously won the World Cup for England. He's been around for almost a decade, I reckon. He scores heaps of runs for Middlesex in the county stuff and four ball cricket as well. But he's saying his career best form.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he probably is just fully rated now. I think he's one of the best players going around in white ball cricket and a lovely bloke to boot. I don't even know what, you know, again, he's getting to a sort of 9 or 10 out of 10 person.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I just wonder what the skeletons are.
What the secrets are.
Yeah.
Where are the bodies
great
on.
Player.
Well, someone who isn't rated any of the English batsmen, according to Stuart Broad, who's just getting himself on that flight to Australia, isn't he, in 18 months' time, complaining already that the bats aren't scoring enough runs for a series 18 months away.
We're talking about this off-air, he goes, Broad's comments, just saying doesn't matter if you bowl 95 miles an hour
right.
If you're not scoring 200. You're not scoring over 200.
Yeah.
But It's like two ways to think about this, right? Like on the one hand, it's extraordinary, like broadside at his own. hate myself. At his own batters, especially someone like Joe Root, I'd imagine, you know, who's skipper and just underperforming with the bat a little bit. It's like, well, you don't get many runs. I can't take any wickets. Doesn't matter how quick I bowl.
Yeah.
Then on the other hand, I'm sort of like, well, I kind of defend him because I'm like, this is how a lot of cricketers think anyway. It's just he's just putting it out into the public domain. I mean, selfishness is a very important currency in cricket. You know, yes. Broad's just saying what all players think. And I noticed, like, Jonathan Liu, very good writer, did a piece for The Guardian titled, you know, Wasted Summer.
Yeah.
Or worse to that effect.
Well, it's kind of what we were talking about, like, last week or, yeah, it was last week when we were wrapping up the summer. Sorry, yeah. Jack, but it was just kind of like, yeah, England had a very strange summer where, yeah, there's some huge moments, like Zach Crawley scoring 200 and Anderson taking 600 wickets, Broad coming back into the team, going past 400. And then it's kind of like, yeah, but Anderson and Broad just won the games again and Wokes did really well. And it's like, what have you learnt this summer?
So Broad reacted to Jonathan Liu on Twitter, like you just wrote in the comments, and essentially said, like he called it clickbait, and talked about all the great things the team had achieved, and someone said, don't rise to it. He said, no, I'm a better player when I do that, which I thought was really funny. Mm-hmm. Firstly, it wasn't clickbait. I mean, like clickbait needs to start with something like, you know, you won't believe how Stuart Broad wasted England summer, or, you know, Broad averaged 10 with the ball. You won't believe what happened next.
I like the Rob Linda clickbait stuff. Exactly. Like stupid Aussies.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
right. England wastes its summer with one weird trick.
Yeah. Dumb fuckery by batsman. What are you thinking?
What are you thinking? I sort of welcome it from Broad, really. You know, at least it's just honest. But on the other hand, yeah, just extraordinary. And cricket is the only game where you feel like someone could be one of the greats, you know, and take over 400 test wickets and actually become more insecure as their career goes on, which is what I feel like his comments radiate insecurity for his place.
Yeah, it's he just wants to play the games. Wants to play the game. Obviously, like, very upset that he didn't play in the first test of the summer, the English summer. And that was, I understand that because he had like a great, he was like the best bowler in South Africa.
Especially, he should play in England.
He should play in England. He's the best bowler in England. Yeah. He's probably ahead of Anderson at the moment for best bowler in England. Mm. But then I suppose everyone said that, you know, for that test match specifically where they picked Wooden Arch and it was like, this is for the Gabba in 18 months' time. And everyone was like, nah, fuck that.
But maybe that thinking is wrong too, because like what I mean, I know there's upside to like maybe Root captaining those guys and working out the different rhythms of the game if Wooden Arch play. I know we've sort of gone over this. Like, I think the great thing the Australian team did was like they literally had like a paradigm shift from incumbency to horses for courses. And England is still obviously struggling with that a little bit. It's just like, you know, you've got to deal with the egos of getting rid of Broad and Anderson or whatever. You've got to deal with the idea of incumbency. You know, but let's see. Maybe Archer and Wood will just start in Australia and it's as simple as that.
Maybe. It's just like Australia did that. First time I noticed it was when Australia picked Chris Rogers in the 2013 Ashes, maybe, because he had such a great county record and he did really well for Australia for the period of time that he was playing for Australia. And then they picked like Moses Henriques to go and play in the subcontinent. And he was kind of picked out of nowhere, but he was Australia's best player. And then Australia picked Siddle in the Ashes.
Well, that was the big one, ahead of Stark. Yeah, like, oh, let's play the Dibbly Dobbler over the Rockstar because horses for courses. They did the same thing in 2017 in India as well, leaving a lot more balls, more spinners, playing a different, different way. Yeah, all that sort of stuff. Like, so I was surprised that Australia have been kind of leading the way in terms of picking the right team for the right environment and getting away from the dogma of like, well, I'm the best player, so I've got to keep my shirt. Sounds like England have got that issue and just got to get the sense with Broad and Anderson, like they might have too much power. You know what I mean? The fact that you can come out in public and just be like, batter's got to score more runs, fuck that. Like, I don't know how your teammates are meant to feel about that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, especially Joe Root, who's literally struggled for probably 3 years. What's he averaging? Less than 40 last 3 or 4 years. It's remarkable. And it's like, we were talking about this before, mate, but like, I just can't see how England win a game in Australia. Like all of their batsmen are nicking off, aren't they? All of them are. And like, who can they pick? Who can they pick to score runs? I'm not sure the guys who are scoring runs in County Championship at the moment, but you know, it just hasn't worked out for guys like Bairstow or Root in Australia. Or I mean, they tried Carberry up in the batting. I can just see Rory Burns just getting bumped out. Zach Crawley front dogging. It's going to nick. It's all nicky. Ollie Pope, though, fuck, I hope Ollie Pope scores some runs. Hasn't scored any runs yet in his career, really, but, you know.
It's about Archer taking the new ball and winning those opening exchanges.
Archer needs like 35 wickets in Australia.
Ben Stokes being the king.
I mean, yeah.
Stokes, Archer, Root, I think, are the three keys for them.
So Australia and England are about to play a little six-match series, three T20s, Pez, and they're going to play three ODIs between Southampton and Manchester, of course. Australia over there at the moment, there was a clip went round, which everyone sent to us 8 million times, of the boys – And we'll call them the boys.
Yeah.
Zampa, Stoinis, Mitch Marsh. Good to see Mitch Marsh get a game, actually. You know, just dancing in the gym.
Just dancing in the gym. And it's like it waves of reaction, especially people around, the show writes itself this week. I thought it was really funny. Like everyone gets really giddy these days, like at the sight of men just making movements we don't normally associate with, like macho Australian cricketers. But I think it makes people happy. It'd be like, oh, great. These blokes being a little bit different, being themselves a little bit. You know, here are three blokes, you know, performing some sort of ritualistic dance, you know, more associated with nightclubs. Mm-hmm. Mitch Marsh looked like he was, you know, at an evening festival set, you know, like sunsetting, visor on, speed dealer, sunnies on. Colourful, billowing, button-up shirt, short sleeve, you know. He just needed to clench the jaw and roll the eyes back and he would have done that perfectly. But just friends enjoying themselves, you know, like really good to see. And we think it's, a, you know, we think we've got something to say here. Like, you know, it's very encouraging signs for the rare movement, you know, across Australian sport. And, you know, eagle-eyed viewers will have noticed on our podcast art this week, like a little logo down the bottom left, saying Rare Sports, and we're pretty excited to let you know that, you know, Higos and I have started a little digital brand that we're calling Rare Sports. TGC is going to call Rare Sports home, and without going too much into it, we're going to add to the stable and have some pretty exciting announcements in the next couple of weeks.
And that first announcement will be that we'll be broadcasting the test matches this summer, Pez, because Channel 7, who we're contracted to, apparently don't want it. They don't want it. And the CEO's come out and said, we might as well fucking broadcast great cricket. Well, what's wrong with great cricket?
Yeah, I was going to say. Like,
fair bit's wrong with great cricket, which is why we've made a career. But, yeah.
Well, he said, yeah, like he said, like James Warburton, yes. Who's, you know, chief of an organisation we're contracted to as well.
JW, we call
it. We're not compromised in any way with this conversation, but yeah, he said they'd send a few cameras down and broadcast great cricket for free, or worse that effect. And, you know, like many thought he was joking, but we've obviously sent a resume in and created a pitch deck to Channel 7 for the board just to explain why there is more drama in grade cricket than professional cricket. We haven't yet heard back. Still waiting the reply.
So Chris Barrett wrote an article in the SMH, and one of the paragraphs in said article was, Cricket Australia's high-stakes battle with its free-to-air television partner has taken another twist, with Seven West Media believing the game's governing body has nullified their $450 million broadcast deal by making a force majeure claim on the upcoming season. Seven have briefed a QC who helped a TV deal between ASIC and Tennis Australia last year. Essentially, like what Channel 7 are saying is that, like, well, none of the good players are going to be playing. There's going to be more club cricketers playing in the Big Bash, which is the big value for Channel 7. And that's their deal. So they've nullified the contract. So they're kind of saying, like, well, we're not going to broadcast the games. Bit of trouble. Bit concerning.
Well, yeah, we can only, you know, speak on behalf of the punters here. And just say we...
Not punter Ricky Ponting,
right. I've got, in case people are mixing that up.
Some people do,
You know, well, obviously people just want to see cricket on free-to-air TV, so let's hope it happens.
Well, it's amazing as well, because England just played that second T20 against Pakistan was on BBC. First time in 21 years the BBC have played cricket live on free-to-air TV, 21 years. It's amazing. So it's kind of like, it's amazing, we sort of take it for granted a little bit in Australia, that that's part of the reason why it's the national game in the country, because it is just available and it's not behind, you know, paywalls. Pez, we've got a couple of great chats coming up.
We do.
Harry Conway and Sam Billings. Which one are we going to hear first? Sam Billings.
Billings.
Look at Sam Billings. They're good chats. Hope you enjoy them.
Hello. Hello. My goodness. Lily really did ask for that, and that's really very silly. And we very nearly had ourselves a fight on the ground.
In return for speaking to me on a handful of occasions, he offered me $6,000, which I accepted.
I walked up to him and I said, how are you bowling your underarms?
I said, I don't know. He said, well, you're just about to find out, aren't you?
He gave me $5,000, and in return he spoke to me on several occasions for pretty routine questions like what the pitch was like, what the weather conditions were.
Get
All right, he goes, he's a short-form specialist with long-form ambitions. I've read that actually online. Nice. He's played for Kent since he was 8 years old. He has, these are my words now, he has boyish good looks with a strong jawline and rapid bat speed. He's building a name for himself with England, but like any English player worth their salt, he's tasted the rough and tumble of Sydney grade cricket. And yeah, look, let's just face it, it's a great rig. We're talking
about it's a great
today.
Salad, isn't
it's
it?
It's a great rig, it's a great salad. Sam Billings, welcome to the Grade Cricketer podcast.
Thanks, lads. Thanks for having me. I'm honoured. I'm absolutely honoured and always love a good word about the salad because I take care of it. So thanks. Appreciate that.
Oh, no worries. Is that blonde's natural?
Yeah, absolutely. Bit of lemon juice in the Sydney sun and away you go.
You're actually currently with the England team at the moment. You've just completed some media interviews, or so you said, via text maybe just to hold us up. But now, where does the great cricketer sit in the pantheon of annoying media obligations for you?
No, it's one of the greats. A bit of a surprise. Couldn't be too overly keen and respond to you guys straight away, could you? Could I? So, let you wait.
Years,
but no, I'm honoured. No, it's good. I'm honoured. Like I said, I'm honoured to be on it, lad.
Bilbo, and I will call you Bilbo as well without invitation. But I just ready up on you this evening, and you're sort of one of these guys who's naturally good at everything you turn your hand to. Turn down a Tottenham trial to play some county cricket. Excellent squash player, probably scratch golfer, rackets. Rackets. Bit of rugby. Like, is there anything you're bad at? What are you bad at?
Music. I'm honking at anything to do with music. So. Yeah, absolutely terrible. So, yeah, sport, that's where I found my niche and I just went with it, to be fair.
Yeah.
Big niche. I couldn't believe, like, we always try, you know, any Englishman worth their salt will have spent some time playing Sydney Test cricket, as we call it, Sam, insecurely. So I couldn't believe my eyes when I read that you, like a man of quite, you know, respectable gentry, as far as I understand, found themselves playing for Penrith. In 2013, like wonderful people at Penrith. Let's just get that right. Beautiful people, great club. You've been given a bum steer there, though. Surely, like, is it a Trevor Bayliss thing? Like, who fucked that up? Like, how have you ended up at Penrith?
Well, yeah, someone said I was playing in Sydney, and then all of a sudden, it's about an hour and a half west. But no, you're spot on. They were unbelievable, and that was the best thing I've ever done for my cricket, if I'm honest. Penrith looked after me fantastically, but it was a bit different to the eastern suburbs and where J Roy found himself strolling around on Coogee Beach. But I was happy. A farmer, farming stock, so I was happy out there.
I mean, can we drill into this? Like, was there a moment where you did get to the club and you went, "What the fuck is this? Like this is not like it is Sydney. Like, don't get me wrong, but it's not. Yeah. It's not coastal. It's not the it's not the postcard Sydney. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, was there a moment where you're like, what's doing?
There are no harbour views.
Yeah, it was especially first couple of weeks. I was put up in a pretty kind of dodgy outhouse. I think it was kind of a late organized kind of thing, but I didn't have an oven. It was pretty ropey, so I did think for the first couple of weeks, and then luckily I got some runs in the first game, actually, funnily enough, against J Roy and the eastern suburbs, who just tore into me and gave me all the chat as per usual. But got 60 odd, won them the game, and I turned around and said, "Lads, is there any chance I could sort something else out here?" But before that, I thought,
change clubs.
Yeah, can I sort something? But I thought I've got a few runs, so I could actually have a word. But before that, I just want to keep my head down and do the right thing. You see,
what was it in all seriousness about playing at Penrith or playing in Sydney that was really helpful for your career? I mean, like, there's always we always joke about the stereotypes of it being rough and tumble in Sydney cricket and the abuse and the sledging, and it's, you know, much harsher climate than it would be for, you know, what English people are normally used to. But it was that your experience, or what was it that made it so meaningful?
Yeah, just getting champed every single week relentlessly. So it was just, it was unbelievable because you have to just earn the respect of your fellow clubmen, but also around the circuit as well. I think every Sydney grade cricketer thinks they could play first-class cricket over in England and said county cricket is rubbish. So we've all heard that before. But it was just, it was great fun. It just teaches you to grow up as well as a young kind of 21-year-old. You think you're better than you are, and you kind of brought down to earth pretty quickly. So I loved it, absolutely loved it. Made some friends for life, and facing Josh Layla and Pat Cummins in the Nets every Tuesday and Thursday when the club captain's telling them to bowl at your head every other ball. So that was interesting, but no, it was a great experience and I loved every minute of it.
Because you're a good mate. And he's your mate, Joe Denley, also played. He had a stint out in Sydney as well, didn't he? And he, there was a famous,
a couple of years.
There was a famous stitch up that went round. It was reported in a newspaper I can't name, but he mentioned that you had a bad sunburn, posting a photo of just some random bloke on the internet with a horrific sunburn.
Oh, that's shocking.
And then his newspaper just picked it up and goes, and there was like a full headline, you know, Billing's shocking sunburn. It's just the wrong bloke, not even the right bloke.
It was just a completely random bloke who he got a picture off the internet of. It was shocking. It was just really, really unenjoyable that. I got some bad press for a while, so not ideal.
We'll move forward to the England stuff now. Sam, you're part of an ODI setup that's, you know, seems to be destroying all comers at present, so much so that Tom Banton was moved to say that it's the hardest team to break into in world sport. Like, I just wanted to know if anyone challenged that privately with Tom. Like, I mean, personally think the US women's gymnastics unit's pretty tough to get into.
Rackets.
Rackets was pretty tough as well.
Penrith third,
Penrith second team. I mean, they were flag champions last year, so yeah, I don't know what he's on about, if I'm honest. No, I'll have a quiet word with the youngster, you know, and he's a 21-year-old. Maybe he needs a bit of Sydney grade cricket, if I'm honest.
Yeah. I saw that you earlier, I was in the last year, I think you announced that you turned down, that you were going to you remove yourself from the IPL auction after a couple of years, obviously playing under Dhoni at CSK there, got yourself a winner's medal in 2018, but you didn't want to play this year out of franchise cricket. So I just want to know what it's like to have too much money.
You're not the first person to say that.
He's got a level. What's going on?
Ask Jimmy Faulkner that story. That was quite funny, actually.
I'll pick that up, actually. I was just going to ask if it's true or false. This did get said to me. I could get this wrong, but this is the way it was relayed to me. You're playing for the Sixers against whichever team James Faulkner's playing for. You're at the non-strikers.
It was actually Kent. He was playing for Lancashire.
Okay. All right, this is how these things work. He gets rid of the striker, turns around and says to you, "That's why they pay me the big bucks." At that moment, a helicopter flies overhead and you reply, "That's my dad coming to watch me."
Absolute tax on that, but there's some truth to that story.
That's amazing. What do you want to say to that?
Not the helicopter bit.
Well, speaking of helicopters, I want to ask you, Bilbo, like, you know, when you play with MS, obviously, you know, you can pick his brain and you know, great player and all that kind of stuff, but I don't really care about that. I mean, like, what do you talk to MS Dhoni about, the absolute rock star that is MS Dhoni? Is he interested in, you know, Brexit, world affairs, coronavirus origins, or is he just like, no, this is how you hit the fucking helicopter shot?
Yeah.
How you look after your salad. That's what he wants to know.
Yeah, true.
No, it was unbelievable. He's a fellow Man United fan as well, so he just used to watch the football. And, he's just very relaxed and chilled out. So, amazing captain, amazing player, and someone I learned a hell of a lot off, especially in the role I'm trying to play. I'm not saying I'm anywhere close to MS Dhoni, but there's definitely things that I've learned off him.
Yeah, sure.
Sam, oh, sorry, I was just distracted. I was thinking about Donny van der Beek, you know, where you want to play him. I just one that's come out in the last couple of days, just like in response to concerns over his and Jimmy Anderson's perceived lack of pace in Australia. Stuart Broad yesterday said that, you know, it's an irrelevant conversation if you're going to be bowled out for under 200. So I don't want to go into like the symbiosis of batting and bowling and the impacts of that and so on. Also, you might be on that tour, but like, I just want to know, like, in the social hierarchy of England cricket, like, how high do Broad and Anderson sit compared to their teammates, and just how afraid of them are you?
Thankfully, the red ball and white ball group are pretty segregated, so yeah, I can dodge that question nicely.
What's the deal with all the great like English wicketkeeper batsmen at the moment? There's Billings, Bairstow, Butler, Folkes, Ollie Pope, Rory Burns. Like what's like in Australia when Warne was going around, everyone was like, in 15 years' time, there's going to be leg spinners coming out of the ears, you know. Yeah. And it's like, so I'm guessing like was everyone's idol just Alex Stewart?
Garen Jones?
Yeah.
Those Puma gloves, him and Gilchrist.
Yeah.
No, we're lucky. We're very, very lucky at the moment. And Banton obviously keeps as well. So
of course, yeah.
We could field a team of wicket keepers, which would be pretty handy at the moment.
It's amazing, so, yeah.
I don't really know. It's just everyone's come along at the right time and, well, wrong time for most of us because there's only one keeper. So, got to keep trudging away.
Well, yeah, I guess that's probably the answer to my question as well. Like, what's the next step for you? You've got a solid footing in the ODI, the short form set up at the moment. I know you've said you want to play red ball stuff as well. How do you sort of blast through the other competitors and get yourself to the top other than just scoring, you know, loads of runs against Australia coming up?
Yeah, I think it's just, for me, it's being as flexible as I can and adaptable in any situation, really. So at the moment, I'm finding myself kind of in the 5-6-7 role to try and finish games off, something that I'm pretty relaxed doing and have done for Kent for a long time. So it's just about taking opportunities. There's so much competition, certainly in the white ball stuff at the moment, that you've just got to get your head down and, like I said, just take it when it comes. And for me, I've been injured for quite a while, well, last year. So it's just not taking it too seriously and just enjoying back playing again, certainly in the international scene. So especially against you guys coming up, should be another great series.
Mm. Do you feel like when you've had your opportunities, Sam, like that, I always feel like when you come into the crease, there's either like six overs left or there's like 15 to win. Like even the other night against Pakistan, you scored 10 and then, you know, one run to win, just not one to point. And it's just feel like, I've never felt like how many times do you feel like you've actually had an opportunity to properly build an innings? Or I know the one day game's hard and, you know, get the opportunity to bat 50 overs, you know, build momentum in an innings. But I feel like when the times you have played for England, you haven't had like like 40 overs to bat or 30 overs to bat to really, you know, make a score.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I'm not kind of making excuses. Sure. There's been times where I haven't taken opportunity, but there's been other times. I think the Ireland series just gone. It was the first time I played consecutive ODIs in like 3 years.
Right.
It was like kind of one game here or there and pretty sporadic. So just for me, it's nice to just get a run of games and just play. And, like I said, when I've had time to bat, I had time to bat in the West Indies and we're four down for not many and managed to get a score there. So it's just being adaptable. And like I said, when the opportunity comes, we'll just take it and do the best I can.
Because you've been in the setup for about 4 or 5 years, haven't you? You've always been really close. And then like last year during the World Cup, that was going to be, you were set to replace Alex Hales, I think it was. And then you dislocated your shoulder, didn't you, for Kent? And it's just like lending the grey cricket lens to that thing of just like, you know, as much as you want your team to win, you want to make finals and you want your club to do well, and this club is interested in England during the World Cup is what I'm saying. But like, you know, that it must have been sort of bittersweet, I suppose, in terms of like really happy for the guys that you know well winning the World Cup, but also like that could have so easily been you know?
Yeah, 100%. But at the end of the day, I know that I gave myself the best chance of being in that squad, and things happen that are out of your control. So it was, in a weird kind of way, it was a really positive thing that happened. You learn a lot about yourself, certainly when you get injured and you don't take things for granted, certainly when you come back. So my captaincy as well has definitely helped, looking after other people, and injuries are just terrible and it really does take its toll. So kind of that duty of care as well is really helped me gain a different perspective. But hopefully I don't get injured again. And like I said, it will be a really positive thing for my cricket, and you kind of just crack on, and certainly bad things happen. And like I said, you move on.
I saw that the match, what day is it, mate? Yesterday the match was on. The first time the BBC had played live cricket for 21 years. And so I wonder, that must have been pretty special to be part of. And do you think it was quite a similar feeling around the country when Owen Morgan went past 50 as it was when, you know, Kieran Trippier bent one in top corner in the semi-final of the World Cup? Same scenes, you reckon?
Yeah, similar kind of vibe, Everyone... Yeah, in Trafalgar Square, just chucking the pistol over each other. Yeah. Too easy. obviously, socially distanced at this point.
Of course. Yes. Yeah. 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 All right, well, Sam, I guess we wish you all the best against Australia coming up.
I guess.
Yeah. Two great clubs playing against each other. Really appreciate you coming on the show as well. You definitely didn't need to do that in any way, but very much, grateful for you coming on, and all the best for the series and beyond.
Cheers, boys. Love your work. Go up.
Okay, here goes. We've got with us Pat Cummins' former housemate. He's self-described as a private school kid from Wurrunga, while Tom Decent in the Sydney Morning Herald last year coined him rare personified. As New South Wales coach Trevor Bayliss once bussed him to the 2014 Shield final for morale purposes only, and 6 years later he's New South Wales Sheffield Shield Player of the Year in a team that won the comp. I know I regularly say this, but this guy truly is the most recommended guest from his colleagues. I'm talking about Harry Conway. Harry, a pleasure to have you finally on The Great Cricketer.
No, thanks, boys. What an intro. Thank you so much.
Welcome. So many places to start here, Harry. Before we get into the important stuff, like the politics behind your move from NDs to Easts, what is it about Harry Conway that makes him so recommended a guest on this show? Like, is it true you've deliberately turned down a few opportunities to get on this show just to create the optimal hype and demand?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's funny you say that. As you mentioned in the intro, I'm such a fish out of water in the fact that I got such a good education. I've started so far ahead of all of these guys who are like, he's the weird one, where it's like, well, I don't really, it's sort of like, am I? But I live with Camo, sort of my first claim to fame to try and get my name out there at training. That didn't work. I got overshadowed a fair bit. Yeah. And I think my career sort of soared once I'd left his place. Yeah, but I think mainly the private school thing, to be honest.
Mm. Fair enough.
And no one does talk about the oppression of the white private school boy. Harry, you and I went to the same school, so I'm looking forward to updating Wikipedia to the most famous Knox alumni. I was informed this morning, actually, that you actually spent most of year 12 playing in the twos. Is that right?
I did, mate. Lots of controversy. I played a little bit in year 10 and then all of year 11. And then in year 12, a few things got to my head, a lot of carry on. And my morale in that side was an all time low. I was a bit of a cancer in that side, to be honest. And so I was dropped and had to have a good hard look in the mirror. There was a big controversy around selections and stuff like that. Didn't make any of the CIS teams. I don't like bringing it up, but I appreciate you guys doing that today. That's good. Really good.
Quite a start.
Well, anyway, you went on to play Australia 19s. Yeah. You were contracted and earmarked early. Now, your New South Wales teammate Adam Zampa said he hated it. What's your relationship to grade cricket?
Adam Zampa. Oh, God, he's rare. Mine's a grade cricket. NDs were, I still say to this day, my best year of cricket, like the most enjoyable year of cricket that I had was whilst I was at school, but actually playing Green Shield cricket for NDs. Had such an interesting group of people come together, in that month or two that you have, you play Green Shield, and we got to the semis. I'll never forget it. We played out at Rosedale in the semis, and I met so many different guys from umpteen parts of Sydney. And as I say, because I was such a sheltered kid from Wurrunga, I absolutely loved it. And we ended up sort of branching out and, I'm still connected to a few of those guys, but, as you do, throughout grade cricket, you see them playing for different teams and whatnot. And, it's quite funny, but they were still, to this day, my best year of cricket, I reckon.
I want to ask about changing teams because, once, they're contracted with the state, we often see players move from their inland clubs, like, you know, NDs or even further out, like, you know, Hawkesbury, et cetera, to coastal surrounds. And it was no different from you. For you, it was like a rite of passage. Okay, I've got a state contract. Now I'll go play for Easts by the beach.
Bondi, yeah.
Yeah. Like, can you take us into the bowels of, like, negotiating a change of club as a state player? Like, we've heard stories of demands for $3,000 a game from others and a lease on a Mercedes and a clause that they look like they're interested. Like, is this par for the course once you get that state call up?
It sort of was. I created a record in New South Wales of being the most, the rookie for the longest time, which is a really bad record to have. Like, you're supposed to do 2 or 3 years, sort of learn the game, you know, listen to people and then upgrade. Whereas I sort of wanted a longer internship, if you like. And so I went the fourth year.
Van Wilder.
Broke the record. Yeah, Van Wilder. And then it was sort of like, okay, you know, the performance is really inconsistent. I'll blame it on my grade club, of all people. It's just like, okay, so you've not listened, you've not done this, like, you've lived with Pat, and you've learnt nothing. So it's the grade club that you're at fault. And it was like, yeah, you know, in my head, I'm like, Waitara's pretty flat, I'm a bowler. It's like, oh, no, I heard a few whispers that a few guys were leaving, so I was like, you know what, it's just the easy move. The reason I chose East is because my manager, this is no conflict of interest, I guess, my manager is the vice president of East. So he naturally was like, look, mate, we need to get you moving. Yeah. Why don't you come to Bondi? And I was like, well, what's the relationship there? It's like, well, I'm VP of East. So it's an easy move in the end.
Never knew.
Yeah. Was that conversation happening in Ravisi's at the time?
Yeah,
that's right. Oh, I bloody love Ravisi's, yeah.
I bet you do. bucket list, yeah. Harry, because you... Go on.
Yeah, go for it.
I was going to say, because I was reading about you this morning, and both your parents are Kiwis, and your dad played high-level footy for Canterbury, I think it was. And so you've kind of got the option as well for playing for New Zealand if you want to go down the Will Somerville route, who also played at East, didn't he? He played at East as well, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, yeah. I did. The last couple of years, as my performance has improved, I guess, I thought long and hard about it. Absolutely love New Zealand as a place. All my family live there, as you said, and... it was just sort of like it was a really tough decision, I'll be honest. But I ended up doing quite well last year, and I think I've found a home here at New South Wales. So I honestly thought about it long and hard. I obviously still want to play Test cricket, but I'm going to try and go the hard route out of the two, I guess, or the harder.
Mm. Well, you've been doing really well for New South Wales, Harry. You were New South Wales. You know, Shield Player of the Year, with the year you guys won the comp. The state had been in the wilderness for a little while in terms of competition wins, you know, like away from its identity as the assumed alphas of the state competition. Like, is it fair to say that under your physical, moral and spiritual leadership, that the old New South Wales is back? And as Zorba did say on our paywall interview recently, that New South Wales just win shit.
mate, 100%. And it's quite funny. On the weekend, we're incognito. We were doing a couple of trial games at Coffs Harbour, and Chris Tremaine's actually returned. Hopefully you get him on the podcast. He is an absolute ripper. So he went to Victoria, came back, and he stood up in front of the group, and he said those words quite literally in front of the head selector and the head coach. He's like, I will be in this team for as long as we win shit. And basically my involvement in this team will only be based on the fact that we win shit. And I was like, we can't have signed this guy for 6 months. Like, if we don't win the first few games, Trent, like, I think we're still going to ask you to play, man. Like, you want a lot for Victoria, mate. You want a lot, but like, it was such an alpha move. Like, day one back in the New South Wales sheds, it's like, boys, you turned your back on me, but I'm going to come back and win shit for you. It's like, whoa, okay, that's aggressive, man.
speaking of alpha moves, because we saw when the New South Wales were awarded the Sheffield Shield and the sort of the photo shoot that happened afterwards.
Yeah.
You would have been part of that. You would have been nice to get around, you know, Smudge and Dave Warner and Pat Cummins and Josh Hayeswood, who were on the top tier of the ladies and receiving the award, which Steve Smith posted about, cutting off the rest of the plebs in the bottom tier.
Oh, mate, don't worry. I was in, like, the far left corner. And the funny thing about that on the day, it was like me and Sock were just, you know, we're sort of hiding out bottom left. And they just kept, like, Sock had just been told that he was, you know, delisted or we were parting ways. And Sock just kept on being moved around by the cameraman like a pawn. It was like, it was one of the biggest alpha moves by Getty Images I've ever seen or heard of.
Notoriously,
like,
man, alpha.
Kick a bike while he's down.
Yeah. Well, pretty uncertain times at the moment, isn't it? Like when the Shield's going to be played, where it's going to be played, what's going to happen with the Big Bash. I mean, how do you feel? Like, how do you process that going into a season when you don't know where you're going to be playing, how you're going to be playing, how many games, all that kind of stuff?
Mate, it's a funny one, and I can give you some hot goss off the press. We sort of as of last week, we've only found out like really what's going to happen. I think we're going to be bubbled down in Adelaide for some Shield cricket, no one days.
Okay.
And then, mate, it's quite funny. My manager actually called me and was like, mate, you might as well pack for 5 months because, you know, if you don't want to double quarantine, like you better stay down there because I'm an Adelaide striker.
Yeah.
So, bit of a weird one this year, but, mate, it's quite funny. Like last few weeks, I've actually battled a little bit just not knowing anything and sort of guessing as to, you know, dates and stuff. I like planning stuff out.
Yeah.
But, mate, what Jakesy's done, which is ideal, is he's organised a couple of trial games in the next 2 weeks out at Raby Oval, mate. So I'm going to catch a red eye tonight.
Good. It's actually nice prep for Adelaide as well. Yeah. Quite dry weather.
Oh, what a stitch up.
Yeah. It's just exactly what you want to do as New South Wales coach when Trevor Bayliss is back in town, perhaps wanting a job. He says, oh, why don't we go and play out at Raby, boys? He does not want the job.
He doesn't want it, yeah. Mm.
Exactly right.
Well, we're talking about the Sheds before. Like in an interview last year, it was written that you'd promoted yourself as one of the larrikins of the group at New South Wales. So, like, there'll be a lot of young people and old people listening to the show, like, desperate to know, like, how to make such a bold move, like, in a change room. So, for the benefit of the listeners, like, what are the steps you need to take to acquire the social capital to make that sort of play? Like, is it a matter of targeting the kingpin? Like, did you just look at Doug Bollinger and just say, listen, I'm going for you, I'm going to neg you, and going from there?
100%. I was, you know, modelled my game off Sock, you know, Dougie, all the guys that obviously played really well. But first and foremost, mate, they're in the team to make people laugh. Like, they're there to be funny more than anything. So I was like, you know, I can do a few impersonations here, you know, try and get the selectors, like, looking at other things as part of my game. Because at the moment, my bowling's just not going to get me into this side. We had, like, Cobes, Doug, Josh Hazlewood. It's like, oh, come on. But this guy's really good at a Bane impersonation, or he does a few Dark Knight things. Like, maybe we look at Conway. He can do the EPL. He can do Bumble. It's like, and then, mate, out of nowhere, after that game we won in 2012, I think it was 11 or 12, Copes was like this guy can't bowl, but he's really funny. And Bayless was like, yeah, you know what? Like, why don't we get him in here? And it was, mate, I'll never forget it. It was one of the great nights. And then, mate, honestly, the sad part about it is my bowling, yeah, it still took me a few years to get it. I was like, fuck, the jokes aren't working. Like, this is bullshit.
Mm. On that trip you're talking about, I was reading in Tom Deason's article in the SMH. He was saying that Steve Smith got you to do Heath Ledger's Joker, and I wonder if that was like if it was just wanted to be entertained or if that was research for Steve.
Yeah, I know. It's a weird one. I think I used to do the Heath. I did the I'm Gotham's Reckoning. I could do Bruce Heath. I could do a little one of Bane. Mate, I was obsessed with that movie. And I think it's the only one that Smudger watched. Smudger loves watching movies. And so any of the characters, like, he giggled at the characters. He didn't really watch EPL, so he's like, oh, who's Clive Tilsley? Like, who's Alan Tyler? Like, who are these guys? Oh, you're right. Like, whoever he wanted, he got. Like, that's his change room.
Yeah.
Like, I know everyone gets you to do impressions, Harry, and, like, I'm not going to just say, oh, can you just give us a Bumble? But, we've actually not set this up in any way, genuinely. I was wondering if we could do a spin on it. Like, can you give us one of your best characters, but can you get them telling you, Harry Conway, that you're not going to play for New South Wales because the test players are back?
Okay, hang on.
I honestly haven't set it up. Like, you're maybe Bumble or Bane telling Harry Conway or Hazelwood's back, you're out, even though you're Shield Player of the Year.
Yep. Welcome back to St James's Park. It is New South Wales 5165. Big news today, it's 12 man Harry Conway being negated by the selectors. A cough strain's been marked it in the media. However, Hazelwood, Stark and Cummins are back up front, and the front three from New South Wales is taking their places. He's back in the bib. It's your man, Harry Conway.
Oh, get him on the bus. Get him down to Canberra.
I can see it.
2012, I'm there.
Get it.
Not that. Harry, I want to know, Under-19s World Cup, I imagine you and Greg Chappell seems like very similar personalities, quite bubbly, charismatic. you know, both done a lot for the game in the country. You know, what was that like playing under Greg?
Mate, you know what? I actually loved it. I found him really dry, and he was very sarcastic, which is sort of my type of humour. When I was, you know, up at the academy and stuff, and I saw him, like, you know, barefoot doing the laps, like in the floppy hat and the shorts, I was like, oh, this is rare. Like, this is what I'm all about. This is why I'm at this academy for 4 months. and I actually got along with him really well. But in the in the actual World Cup and stuff, he's a selector, so he didn't actually. He's a hard guy to get close to. Like, so yeah. I actually take offense, or I'm insulted by the fact that you say that I'm similar to him. I smile as well, so it's like it's a hard one to compare. Apples and oranges, boy. Like, I can't stitch him up. I thought he was really good. He's very dry though. And I guess I was in that mold of like 17, 18, 19, so I was every chance that he was going to pick me in a test match back then, I guess.
Yeah. And obviously in that, you sort of played under 19 World Cups from Knox 2, so you obviously must have taken a stackload of wickets in that school team. But, but when you took a hat trick H in against Nepal, wasn't it? And there was this commentary there of like, you've taken the third wicket, you've bowled the third Nepalese bloke in a row, and you've just run down the wicket screaming, he's done it. Thoughts?
Okay, I'll talk you through it. So
please.
I went into the game with, I was really sore. I was like, the first game against England, I tell everyone now, like looking back at it, I was rested. Like they rested the trump card because we knew we had Nepal coming up. And I was like, look, big crowd. Yeah, if we don't get the result against England, like this Nepal game's a must win for the boys. So I'm like, fuck, I'm going to get up for it. I've got a stress fracture in my tibia. I'd had cortisone in my L5 of my back four. So I'm not sure whether that was referring any pain really down to my tibia, but it certainly wasn't on game day. Mm-hmm. I got through six overs and I went bold. I actually went through their top order like you wouldn't believe. Obviously, you've seen on the video.
Obviously.
Yeah. And I just saw all these blokes running towards me, and it happened so quickly. It was the most amazing thing ever, and all of them just ran towards me, hugged me, and I just screamed out, he's done it, with zinc all up my face. I was like two bucks in that World Cup. I had so much hair. I looked like the biggest dickhead. It's so hard to watch back, but people from around Australia, like the Bancrofts, the Turners, when they see me, they still refer to me as he's done it. They don't even say that. They're like, he's done it. It's like all these, like Mitch Marsh, you're walking across the whack with Mitch Marsh, like, he's done it, here he is. It's like,
brilliant. Bison.
Correct me if I'm wrong, like, it seems like you're a leading proponent of in the rise of rare culture within Australian cricket. You're expressive, yeah. You play with colour, you've got charisma. It's almost as though you're not an automaton robot programmed only to make the arm and leg movements conducive to hitting the off bail, then having beers. I just want to, like, given you're on the inside, I just want to ask, like, how much bemusement do you observe among previous generations at rare behaviour? Like, you know, do the golden generation look at you out the corner of their eyes, never giving you the fullness of their body language, just radiating, like, passive aggression at the idea someone's being weird, you know? Like, or they're just jealous, like, that you're prepared to be yourself. Like, what's been your experience of that?
It's really funny, and it's something I actually get asked quite a bit. It's something that I've cultivated over the years, but to be honest with you, I've actually had to tone it down a fair bit because it's really hard to, it's like, when you go into a squad or, you know, you talk to all these guys now, all these young guys, they're really shy, and sometimes they're from Western Sydney, and it's like, they'll let their game do the talking, which is honestly, the best way to do it, and it's completely the opposite of what I did. I was like, I'm gonna try and make as many friends as I can. You know, the social skills that I built from school, I was sort of like, okay, these guys from all over Sydney, like, they're actually really cool. You know, drop my guard and all that. And they're like, they actually found me quite funny. So I was like, okay, cool, I'm going to run with this. And then a few years down the track, honestly, my cricket wasn't going to keep me around. So I sort of had to take a back seat because guys, and I think under Trevor Bayliss as well, he's quite a serious guy, he's a very good coach, sort of like, you know, we can joke and laugh, but like, you're not going to be here if you actually can't bowl. So I went the backwards or the reverse way of doing it. But now I look at the back today and I'm like, I wouldn't necessarily change a heap. Like, I've still got mates that I've had, you know, I consider lifelong friends. And as you said, like, it's so funny. Your intro was brilliant, and it was like so offensive. But it was like he won the Sheffield Shield Player of the Year last year after. Do you know what I mean? Like it's an incredible journey. That's how I look at it, anyway. Yeah,
you sort of you use your character to sort of help get you into the game and into the team, and you've actually developed a whole hell of a lot of skill since then as well. And you're at the, you know, the leading the pack of the team that won the comp.
Same as Bradman, actually.
Yeah. That's exactly how Bradman story. Did it. Yeah. King on the circuit, Bradman, those boats. Harry, we want to thank you for joining us and giving us a little taste of the rare enigma that is yourself. We're wishing you all the best for the season up ahead.
Thanks, lad. Anytime.
He goes, Father's Day is just around the corner, in Australia, that is. Although, if you are a father in the UK, you may as well celebrate it as well. Both countries are very tied. I mean, but they're head of state. So people will be thinking about how they might be rewarded, how they might be acknowledged on Father's Day. Do you want to leave a few hints for people? Well, one hint is get some budgie smuggler paraphernalia. Do you want budgies? Do you want a custom design on that budgie? Do you want masks?
Well, you can do whatever you want. I mean, I was just thinking, because Joe Root obviously had his... child recently. I think he had a girl. Anyway, but you know he's been left out of the teats when he scored Australia. But he scored 250. When he went back to Yorkshire, he got 250s. You know, so it's kind of like, what's going on with Joe? Ed Smith said that you know there's always a place for Joe in the side. So you know people got to be thinking about Joe Root right now. Why not put Joe Root in a pair of budgies?
Exactly. What else is going on around the world? I mean,
QAnon.
Yeah, QAnon stuff. You get some if that's what you believe. But
when you came over today, I was reading some QAnon stuff, and I think it makes a lot of good points. Yeah. You know, it's not based on any sort of fact, but they do make some interesting facts.
Really good T-shirts as well. Is that like, it's a really good merch grift, QAnon.
Why not? You know, Elon Musk's microchipping people's brains. You know, Bill Gates. A picture of Bill Gates as Edward Scissorhands, but with vaccines instead of scissors.
Yep,
you can be creative.
They're just some of the ideas custom designs you can put on your budget.
Don't listen to me.
And now today we can tell you, you will get free shipping if you enter the code CHAMP. That's right. It's a TGC specific code. Wow. Enter the code CHAMP for free shipping if you want that kind of paraphernalia, whether we've suggested it or you just want what's on the website or your own idea for Father's Day or otherwise. BudgieSmugglerUK.com or just BudgieSmuggler.com.
Pezzy lad, hashtag AskTGC. Are you ready?
I think I am. Hashtag AskTGC is getting incredibly good. I know we say it all the time, but the sheer number of submissions are at record highs. I wonder if it's a UK thing. It's more of a culture.
I feel like
print.
People are at home.
Yeah.
They need to get stuff off their chest. They've got 3 hours. Why not send an essay into the boys?
Yeah. Lengthy essays.
Let me say, I fucking read some essays this week, man. Yeah. Mostly on QAnon. But also,
that's a separate issue.
That's a separate thing. I've actually mixed those two up. My brain's a bit fuzzy. It's a bit TV staticky at the moment. Got a bit going on. Anonymous writes in. This one came in from Patreon, Pez, and we were thus obliged to read it there.
Yeah.
Dear TGC, please keep anonymous for possible legal slash wider implications.
Nice.
As a struggling third slash fourth grader, park player, my inability to make runs or get wickets is making me feel like a social outcast. To put into perspective, our first 11 captain made over 700 runs, including 5 tons, 2 consecutively in the first 2 games of the season, and took 9 wickets bowling yuck doorknobs. I've realised my only way to socially compete is to have a better rig than them. But with the rise of COVID in Melbourne, we are unable to attend gyms. So here is my question. Do I continue to work and train in my dream of being a good player, or do I find a reliable source of anabolic steroids from China to improve my chest and pipes and make my way into the ones as a pure rig-based selection? Cheers. Anon. Not to be confused with QAnon, but that is your question from Anon.
I'm surprised that Anonymous, I can't just think of anything there that would have given him away. I mean, he's speaking for about 7,000 cricketers there. So I'm surprised he's only just realising now that his only way to socially compete is to have a better rig. I mean, that's the best way to socially compete in life, isn't it? Beyond even your cricketing skills. I'm looking at you directly.
Deeply.
I just have another question. It's for you. Like, he goes, can you get, in the absence of anabolic steroids from China, which I realise is an option, can you get big or even ripped from home workouts? You know, I go on muscleandstrength.com. People there look good, but I reckon they're using gyms.
mate, you got a door, you got a gym. All right?
All right? No, you can't.
Because, like, so if you want to get big, that's based on resistance. Now, like, to be athletic looking, you're going to get lean, that's like 99% diet. Like, the thing is, like, abs are made in the kitchen. They'll be like 50% here, 50% at the gym. It's like, no, it's like, it's overwhelming majority of
it's caloric diet. Deficit.
Yes, exactly right. Now,
so you can get ripped at home.
Yeah, you can lean out at home, no doubt.
Lean out, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can just do some cardio. Like here in Melbourne, you can only be out, you know, for an hour a day. You can't leave 5Ks in your house, blah, 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 blah. Mm. So, yeah, it's definitely harder to do any sort of – the gyms are closed and they'll be closed forever here. But I just thought it's like having a good body is far more – it's far more readily accessible and achievable than to be good at cricket because it's a closed skill. So cricket is like there's so many things out of your control.
If you ain't done it yet, brother, then you're not going to be good at cricket. Go down a few grades maybe.
Yeah,
you that's can. Another way. Politicise your way into some runs.
That's a good point.
Secret option three.
Little secret door there. There's always options here. That's good from you, actually. And I will say it like that because I'm surprised.
It's good for your capabilities.
The thing is about, you know, if you want to get big and, you know, stuff is that you'll have the curse then of never being happy with how you look. You'll never achieve perfection.
Paradox.
Exactly. You'll never achieve satisfaction about how you feel, which is obviously how most girlfriends' cricketers feel. Generally, they'll never be satisfied. So Shane Warne took a diuretic for aesthetic reasons, claiming not to have used it as a masking agent for performance-enhancing drugs, but rather he was doing it to look good. So you can also be the greatest player of a generation, of a lifetime in the history of the code, and also just also want to look good. So there's that as well. Half the Australian team has Botox in their faces, so don't be scared to inject some stuff.
Yep.
Look, I'd be wary of getting anabolic steroids or peptides from China at the moment. But there's probably some stuff you can get from Russia.
Yeah. From experience?
I'd never do that, but if you want to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've seen it online.
I've seen it on the dark web.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seen heaps of stuff on the dark web.
That was an interesting point. So you're saying as someone who has achieved a reasonably good looking body, and I only say that I'm only parroting what I see from your DMs that you get.
Right.
Is that like even though you look good, you can still never feel as good as you want to look.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
It's more about self-esteem, really. Like it's more about finding what your actual value is in life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just doing heaps of push-ups. As Kate Moss said, nothing tastes as good as skinny feels. I've never tried myself.
That's not true.
Isn't it? Yeah. I never tried.
There's heaps of things which taste better.
Really well. Heaps really good
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
Like what? You had Guzman Gomez last night.
I did.
The business is going well.
Yeah.
Xavier Coy writes in.
Yeah.
Xavier wrote last week and we've given him a double write because I just really enjoyed this question. Xavier Coy.
So did Xavier write in last week?
He did, or the week before.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
You're right. Uh-huh. Here's something. Two erudite gentlemen on the reflexively brushing themselves off as idiots on the internet are providing wonderful insights into the machinations of the cricket lover's brain. Where's your Order of Australia? People don't understand your service to society, how you're helping people overcome the pain, the yearning, the anger, the daddy issues cricket brings out. Don't know what he's talking about. Things are getting out of hand here. Fucking cricket is slowly starting to be more and more ubiquitous in my life. It's terrifying. Depressive episode. Fixed by the YouTube video of Steve Waugh's sledge on Herschel Gibbs for dropping the World Cup. Cop that, Herschel. Fucking forearms. Bet that red hanky gives you nightmares. Am I turning into an angry 50-year-old noodling nothing offies who sledges 14-year-old future stars before going back to the sheds, knocking back 16 beers, trying to teabag his mates and then getting back home trying to cry over his unsigned divorce papers and wanking into his favourite sock? Hypermanic episode. I drove from Sydney to Barrow last week to go to the Bradman Museum. Good average, shit bloke apparently. There was a photo of the Don licking a soft serve ice cream cone that's been pierced into my brain. Genuinely disturbing. I bought a bat. Cricket is a cancer. How do I cut it out? Why do I love something so much that clearly hates everything it comes into contact with? Great pod. Get it, Pezzy lad and Hig rat. P.S. I was told bipolar is now part of the neurodiverse family. Fuck me. What is the world coming to? I think anyone who loves cricket should be part of my clan. Jump on board, lads. We'll start a support group. I'll provide the Kingstons.
Okay, well, let's go through this step by step.
Okay, yeah.
First of all, thank you, Xavier. Second of all, the Steve Waugh thing, like how fucking good do you have to be at batting to be batting in a World Cup match and a bloke drops a catch and just sledge the fielder? Like what's that level?
And what's that like familiarity with playing for Australia where you can just say stuff that you'd say in the backyard. Like, you've just literally played like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of matches for your country. Mm. It's just another match. He drops it. You're like, he's dropped the World Cup.
Yeah. I've seen this before.
Yeah.
I've done this a million times before.
Exactly. Not like don't have adrenaline or anything. You're just ice cool. Anyway.
That's the thing as well, that you can only pull that off in the international level. Mm. And if you're Steve Waugh, because like I've heard that said in a club game that I was a part of, a guy said that bloke just dropped the grand final. Oh. Fucking worst thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
He actually did drop the grand final in hindsight, but he was right to do that. But yeah, now I've never understood the sock thing, wanking into a sock. I'm not really sure what that like stimulation is trying to replicate.
Yeah.
Carpet burn.
No, nor I. It's can't.
Not my thing. Especially these days with ankle socks. Good average ship bloke might be the good average ship bloke might be the most succinct, perfect analogy for Bradman ever. But also there's like this fascination like where you speak about often with Bradman doing anything, like Xavier was saying, like you saw a photo of him licking an ice cream cone, whatever. And I just think that
that's the Bradman gear I'm into, to be honest.
Mate, that's why Bradman's so fascinating. I mean, you just think about like Bradman like rattling up in the back of a toilet on one of those boat tours to England.
You and think about that, yeah.
I think about it all the time. It's just like, yeah, what was going on? Bradman doing anything, he's just because he's such an enigma, he's such this like angelic, perfect character. Unless you break it down.
I like Bradman's like Puritanism, really. Like I like the connection to religion, the Protestantism. I like the parallels with Marnus Labuschagne. Like I actually get safety out of Labuschagne's Christianity and faith. I don't personally subscribe to the, I guess, the prophecy or the edict itself. Mm-hmm. I think it's incorrect. But I get a lot of safety out of the fact that when he goes in, and Joffrey's just knocked out Steve Smith. He knows the Lord's with him. And I'm like, you've got that mental toughness that comes with that.
That's true, actually, because you don't find that – because you seem to get that a lot more in, like, in American sports where typically African-American community-based sports, they're, like, very heavily into Christianity and stuff and they always thank God and that sort of thing. Like, God's big in the US.
Yeah,
really, really big there. Yeah. Really big there. Much like Marnus is here. So it's like, yeah, you do kind of get this safe feeling of like, oh, well, he is a Christian, therefore he's committed his life to this one thing. He has a discipline.
And just because they're Christian doesn't necessarily mean like, oh, well, they're going to be, you know.
Boring as fuck doesn't mean that necessarily.
Or like, you know, you might think, oh, I know the story of Jesus. It's a story of love. And there's a lot of other stuff that goes on in the gospel that's actually very, very stuff, great, man. Cricket. Very, very hard.
Talking snake.
Mm. God's pretty
Cain killing Abel.
Old Testament, God goes pretty hard on people, pretty vindictive about stuff. Yeah. He goes really hard. And I think if you bring a bit of that Old Testament hardness to your cricket, then that's going to leave you in pretty good stead. So
Old Testament is much more Steve Waugh. That's the harder. Whereas Tim Payne's kind of more New Testament.
New Testament.
It's more New Testament.
Disciples, yeah.
Yeah.
And where was Langer. Warner? Warner, Judas, yeah.
Yeah, Warner. Maybe. Yeah, he sort of crosses over a bit, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's Moses?
Judas was a good bloke.
He was on Rex. W. Jackson writes in. He's also a Patreon subscriber. Should I read the first? I read all of it. Hi, Pez and Egos. Thank you for my tarot reading. He's referring to the...
Yeah, tarot reading if you sign up at $10 a month on Patreon. Anyway, right. Yeah.
It was a good laugh and my apologies for only giving you a single initial to work with. Having become accustomed to my newfound internet anonymity, I'm reluctant to part with it. However, I can offer up two additional middle initials if that would assist with furthering the tarot reading. While I think you were close to the mark with several of your readings, I feared I didn't provide you enough details for optimal accuracy. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. I think middle initials...
Next paragraph.
Sure. In the meantime, I have an #RCGC off the back of a few recent episodes debating Anderson's bowling record and the relative worth of right and left-handed runs. Mm. Do you think there is an exchange rate between English and Australian wickets and does it fluctuate over time?
Yes.
Personally, I benefit from transferring from Sydney to London soon after the Brexit vote, taking advantage of a collapsed British pound. At the time of the Brexit vote, Anderson had 433 test wickets, putting him a bit above Pollock and below Stain, which feels to me where most Australians would rank Anderson in the pantheon of bowlers. Is it possible that English wickets since 2016 have been rendered mostly worthless as the wicket exchange rate also collapsed during Brexit?
Lovely.
Alternatively, could it be that the exchange rate was so inflated in 2005 against an all-time great Australian side that no English bowler will ever overtake Flint off 05? Would appreciate your thoughts, chaps. All the best. Pezzy lad.
I completely agree with this, methodology to like rating wickets. Not all wickets are equal.
There
is an exchange rate. Like if there wasn't an exchange rate on wickets, Murali would be the greatest bowler of all time.
But he ain't.
Warne wouldn't even be the best spinner of his playing cohort, you know, of his era. Murali would be.
Right.
Brett Lee would be Australia's fourth best ever bowler. Ever. Right. Brett Lee. Binger. Right. Quick.
Yeah.
Quick.
He was really quick, mate. Yeah. But he was quick.
He was quick. Yeah, yeah. Rapid.
Yeah.
Rapid. Couple better bowlers than him, though.
Mm-hmm. Sean Tate.
It's the wet night in Stoke principle, really. Right. You need to be able to do it there. That's why Messi will fail. Okay. Okay. I can't add anything more to W. Jackson's.
Well, I had an interesting thing where I then went to look up what the most valuable and least valuable currencies are in the world. I thought I might apply it to the test playing nations, if you'd be so kind. Now, the Kuwaiti dinar, I believe it is the highest value currency in the world. So that's like, where are wickets the most valuable? And I had that as Australia because I feel like there's enough in it for bowlers. So, for instance, the Bahrainian dinar is number two. Now, I thought that's South Africa because there's a bit in the wickets in South Africa and you're playing at altitude, therefore it's quicker. So you become
so Australia's the toughest wickets, really. It's the flattest.
Well, it's the toughest, but it's also like, so for instance, like the Vietnamese dong is the second lowest value currency in the world, as you obviously know. Now, that to me is Sri Lanka. We're like the wickets easy in Sri Lanka. So like Harath, for instance. Right. Harath got like over 400 test match wickets. Mm-hmm. One of the greatest, but he might have got over 500 test match wickets. He's got heaps of wickets.
Ever
seen Harath bowl a good spell? Ever.
I think that's probably a bit harsh.
It is a bit harsh. Now, the Iranian rial is the lowest currency in the world, and I reckon that's the UAE. Mohammed Abbas.
What do you think Abbas's wickets there are easy? Is that what you're saying?
I just don't think they translate anywhere else. There's no value to them.
Oh, I see, yeah. If Abbas does that anywhere else, he plays threes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except in England, where there's some sort of crossover there.
Yeah. Well, I like the idea that the whole exchange rate collapsed post-Brexit. So
I like that as well.
Because I do think that Australia rates Anderson probably between Pollock and Steyn. I think you'd struggle to find many Australians who would genuinely prefer James Anderson over Dale Steyn, but many of them would say would concede yes, he's better than Sean Pollock. I think he's placed them wonderfully there, W. Jackson, if it is indeed a he.
Yeah, if it is indeed a he. Well, thank you very much to Harry Conway and Sam Billings for coming on the show because they've made it this far as well, and as have you people out there, you lovely people out there. Thanks for joining as ever. Pezzy lad, hig rat.
Signing off.
See you guys next week.